You're listening to Marketplace Weekend, where the economy meets real life. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. You just heard about housing in Puerto Rico. Another huge issue is education. The school system is in the middle of a massive reorganization. It involves closing 280 public schools, combining resources, and introducing charter schools and vouchers. Yes, it's about the hurricane, but also so much more than that. It's pretty normal to have a bunch of teachers, parents, and kids outside an elementary school at 7:45 in the morning. Generally, though, you don't see a 7-year-old chanting with a protest sign. They're saying, "I want a school that's open." And they're referring to John F. Kennedy Elementary School in Toa Baja, about 15 miles outside San Juan. JFK is one of 280 public schools slated to close over the summer. That's roughly a third of the island's schools. Enrollment has dropped across Puerto Rico since Hurricane Maria. The education department says it's down by 38,000 students since May. Uria Vargas sends her daughter Gabriela to JFK. She's 9, and she's a special ed student. If the school closes, Vargas says, the next school closest to them is 30 minutes away. Even though she has a car, she says getting there would be really difficult and it would really affect them. What the island's government wants to do is consolidate schools, some with declining enrollment and some with lower test scores or buildings in bad shape. Teachers' unions are fighting the closures and a plan from the governor that would allow for charter school and voucher pilot programs starting in 2019. JFK Elementary's building has a pretty courtyard and cheerful decorations. Online records show the school's test scores need work and that the number of students here has declined in the past few years as the island suffered its debt crisis. But teachers argue that the numbers are bouncing back, even as they note that the principal left for the mainland after Maria. Pirette Hidalgo's second-grade classroom is decorated with drawings of Spider-Man. The room's door shows him climbing through a city at night. Inside, 15 students sit in little groups learning about important historical sites in Puerto Rico. But there's a sign in the classroom that underscores how tense things are right now. It reads, "Education is not for sale." The whole situation feels raw, like no one trusts each other. And up front, on the whiteboard, it says Julia Kelleher wants to close my school. Kelleher is the Secretary of Education. She worked as a consultant to Puerto Rico schools for about a decade, but only started in this job last year. She says the closure plan could save $150 million. She's both ambitious and the target of a lot of anger. In protests like the one at JFK, people chant, "Julia, go home." I ask Kelleher why she thinks things have gotten so nasty.
I don't know. I mean, it's difficult. People are being confronted with a reality that has been hidden for the last 10 to 15 years. The debt crisis and $73 billion didn't just pop up, right? So someone coming in to do the things and being honest and transparent about the why and making those tough decisions doesn't make it hurt any less.
And then, of course, in the middle of all of this are the kids. Many went through the storm or lost homes. JFK's social worker, Maria Dolores Torres, says they're already traumatized. She says she lost her voice because of the stress.
And the entire government isn't visualizing the specific experience of the children, the need of the children. A loss, another loss. These are a lot of losses at one time. They're mourning, and the kids need to recover. I mean, our kids lost everything. What else can I say?
You heard a little bit of Puerto Rico's Secretary of Education, Julia Kelleher, in that piece. We spoke for a while, and she told me that her focus isn't on how many schools are closing, but on developing a system for the changing needs of Puerto Rico.
So how we came up with this list really had much more to do with understanding what the negative patterns or the ineffective patterns of resource utilization were, what we think the system should be, and to try to identify sort of what's the right size. Now, bearing in mind the unique geography that characterizes Puerto Rico, it's not that easy to just go, you know, up and down a mountain. So that's one thing. But then we looked at a series of other criteria. There are some buildings that are so old and have a physical plant that is so deteriorated that it would cost more to try and repair it than to just try to find a new placement for the students. students. We have schools where you don't have a full faculty. So then we looked at that at a wide range of factors. And once we knew how many we should have, then we looked at the number of schools in each of those municipalities and said, how could they be reorganized? So you see on the list schools that meet those criteria, but you also see schools on the list that are necessary to consolidate with others in order to right-size the system.
Is New Orleans the model? I've noticed you tweet about it. Obviously, a lot of people like to talk about the recovery district. Is that the model?
I don't think so. We mirror more a D.C. model than anything else, except D.C. didn't have a hurricane.
Right.
They had a fiscal oversight board. They decentralized their system and broke up a unitary system, created a state office of education, put in a new chancellor, and started to implement reform. So we look more like that. I think the charter environment here is a lot different than it was in New Orleans. We opened up all our schools. I mean, probably 75% of the schools were open by mid-November. New Orleans was a place where 4 months later, they got five schools open. Everyone had left. We weren't in that situation. And I also think we're not a place where stateside charters can just sort of fly in and pop up a shop, right? It doesn't really work that way.
When you bring up DC, actually, you raise some interesting points. Who, in your mind, will be the chartering authority? Is it a national brand like KIPP, or is it, you know, a series of kind of homegrown folks who will be running those schools?
It could be both. I think that a place like KIPP is going to want to consider whether this is a good fit for them. And so if the facilities issue isn't one that can be worked out, or they don't have enough flexibility, or the funding doesn't quite match, then it's not likely to be, you know, successful. So while I think they could come, it was great to hear that they have sort of this set of things that's important to them. We're looking for support from, you know, foundations that would be interested in supporting this work. We want to work with people who've been effective standing up schools. But there's also a lot of sort of local interest. We have some community organizations that have done great things with their kids and want to solidify that and not just deal with them, you know, before school and after school. They want to see if they can run the whole day. So the previous education law talked a lot about these schools of the community. And it was a concept that we never really sort of wound up implementing with Fidelity. We talked about it, but they really had no control. They had no money. The conditions were poor. The principals didn't make any decisions. And what we're actually going to be able to accomplish with the education reform bill is allowing that concept to actually flourish. And it's consistent with what is important to the local culture.
Secretary Kelleher, thank you.
My pleasure.